Welcome to the podcast, From Crisis to Connection. I'm Jeff Stewart, licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'll be bringing the professional perspective.
I'm Jody Stewart, unlicensed wife, mother, daughter, sister, friend, and neighbor, and I'll be bringing the regular, everyday perspective.
We are all about relationship recovery, and we'll tackle tough topics like infidelity, abuse, addiction, pornography, and betrayal trauma.
We also focus on helping you build stronger connections in your most important relationships. So thanks for joining us. We're glad you're here.
There are so many of us men that are walking around totally disconnected from our hearts. In fact, when I say that phrase, there's probably a lot of men out there listening that are wondering, what the heck am I even talking about? What does it mean to discover your heart, to know your heart, to be in your heart? Maybe you've even heard that from your partner or from a loved one who says, you know, they can't feel you, they can't feel your heart. And this can feel very abstract and pretty difficult for a lot of guys. A lot of guys have not either been taught or had experiences and even know what to do with that type of an idea or statement. This is a huge casualty in the lives of men and the lives of those who love them. So today we're going to talk about how to help men discover their hearts and some great resources to do that. Before I introduce you to our guest and dive into this topic, I want to let you know about a free resource you can download immediately to help you heal in the aftermath of betrayal, or if you're the one who broke the trust. This free video course is available using the link in the show notes, and you can get it right away. This is a free video course that I created to help you learn how to navigate the early days, weeks, months of betrayal. Even if you've been in this process a while, there's a lot of things that you can cover in there that will help you make sure you're doing a thorough job. So click on the link in the show notes for this course, and I'll send it to you right away. We invited our friend, Kurt Frankum, who is a board member of the nonprofit men's organization, Warrior Heart, to join us for a discussion on how men can find their hearts and re-energize their lives. So this is a great discussion to listen to, whether or not you're a man. We all have men in our lives who, as Kurt says, need permission to not need permission to reclaim their own hearts. So many men, as I said earlier, are getting separated from their hearts and they live on autopilot. So then addictions, trauma, abandonment, and other challenges can even create more separation and make it difficult for men to feel alive and to feel energized. And therefore, it can make it difficult for them to connect with themselves, connect to God, and connect to their most important relationships. So let's dive into our interview today with Kurt Frankum. All right. Well, welcome, everyone. It's good to be with you once again. So we have a special guest in studio today.
Right here.
It's just a real privilege to have him here in town and chance to connect with him. This is Kurt Frankum, and we'll have him get like the deeper introduction here,
sure.
But we've known Kurt for a lot of years, and he's a fellow podcaster and content creator and leader. He just does some incredible stuff. And today we're really going to focus on one arm of some of the work he does, which is really helping men do a lot of their own personal work. And we obviously have a huge interest in that with the work we do with couples. And also just as a man, it's something that I care deeply about. And we have three sons. And, you know, we're talking about this stuff all the time. And so just really excited to jump into this conversation. So, but before we do, we'd love for you to tell our audience who you are, what you've been up to, and so they can get to know you better.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So my name is Kurt Frankum, and I live just outside of Salt Lake City, Utah. And yeah, I'm a fellow podcaster. I have a podcast called Leading Saints. And as is the case with most podcasts, we have a niche of a niche, you know, so we focus on leadership topics in the context of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I think any religious leader or probably even any parent can gain from the content that we put together. So I started the podcast in 2014, and I just came into this thinking, you know, there's a variety of questions and problems that leaders face in the context of leading a congregation. And so I want to jump in and find the experts or the therapists or the whoever and see if we can begin to make some headway on some of these tough situations. So
you're coming up on 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that's incredible.
700-800 episodes. I've lost count. So
yeah. Wow.
Yeah. You'll get there. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I get to talk to some great people and really talk about some fascinating problems.
Yeah.
So,
and then for today's, I mean, more specifically, even niching down even more, you're on the board of directors for Warrior Heart. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Warrior Heart is a Leading Saints is a nonprofit organization, and also is Warrior Heart. And so we've Leading Saints long ago. I partnered with them, and maybe there's some as far as the way I was connected with them. I had a friend. So, and you've interviewed him, Steve Shields.
Yeah, he's the host of Unashamed Unafraid.
Yeah, great
which
podcast.
Is a great podcast.
Yeah, he tells stories about people in recovery from sexual addiction and whatnot.
Yeah.
Really inspiring stuff. So early on, like when I was trying to create content for around, you know, overcoming pornography and for church leaders to help people overcome pornography, he was sort of like my go-to. Like I'd call him and ask a question or whatnot. So out of the blue, he invited me to this men's retreat. And I thought it was some like addiction recovery men's retreat. And I'm like, okay, I'm Steve, I'm interested in knowing like how to help men overcome pornography, but I don't want to necessarily go and spend 3 days in the woods to figure that out. And so he's like, no, it's not for addicts. It's just for men. I'm like, okay, I don't know. But I drug my feet for a while. He finally got me there. And I remember I intentionally showed up late. I was just like, I'm just going to be weird.
Passive aggressive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'm like, and then I remember, registering. This guy comes up to me and gives me this hug. I'm like, okay, here we go. The weirdos have started, right? You know, and I think all exactly. I think a lot of men sort of start like that, sort of, this is going to be weird. Like, we're going to be putting war paint on and loincloth or something, right? But then, like, I believe it was lunchtime during the first day, I, like, stood up and looked around, and just to see the dynamic of suddenly these men were warmed up to the experience, and they're leaning in, they're having discussions, like, real discussions. I'm like, oh, my goodness, like, they figured out, like, men, you know, they've cracked the code. Because and I contrast that to what I see like on a typical Sunday when I'm at church and how men interact. And, you know, I wonder if some are there just because the wife has the keys to the minivan and they can't go home anyways, you know, it's like, and so I sort of saw what they were doing. Like, this is what I always hope my church offered me. Right. And so I realized it wasn't a weird thing. It was simply, you know, just unplugging, getting away to a retreat and listening to concepts that resonate with the core desires of a man's heart. And sitting there and learning, I was like, this is it. Like, they are connecting with men that I feel like so many churches or communities try to do. So I just continue to go to them, and then they invited me to be on their speaking team. And now I'm on their board of directors, and now we facilitate these men's retreats as many places as possible. We have our Utah flagship location, and then we've done one in Arizona and Alaska and Idaho. So,
Alaska.
Yeah. That's a great place for a men's retreat.
Yes. Yeah,
yeah, no kidding.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And you've been involved with Warrior Heart for how long?
It's probably been 5-6 years now since that first experience that I had. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, so let's dive in. Even just off what you said there, it's amazing to me like how many people sort of are like, well, women are emotional, men aren't emotional, right? Let's just start with that sort of generic stereotype. And I'm like, have you seen Braveheart?
Right.
Like, men?
Or even
here, I'll turn it to you.
Women need community, but men don't need community.
Yeah,
that's
the feeling, right? That's out there.
Sort of this sense that, like, men are just lone wolves. They're just, you know, they don't want to complicate things. They're just about the bottom line. You know, they don't multitask. They're just, you know, they're just linear. Like, there's all these stereotypes about how simple men are, and women are so complicated. Yep. And I'm like, man, the men that I've worked with, and even as a man myself, and I've gone to men's retreats, like, not my experience at all.
Yeah, even with the stigma of the toxic masculinity, right? That any sign of sort of this masculine nature is sort of dismissed or criticized, right? Mm-hmm. That, oh, you shouldn't act that way. And I remember a meme, these memes kind of drive me crazy, that it showed like these men in football stands. It may have been like in Green Bay, Wisconsin, right? The dead of winter, they're all bundled up, but they're there, you know, ready to watch the football game. And said something like, if men had as much motivation to go to church, it would be, you know, basically the shaming message of like, they'll go to any football game, but they won't go to church. And to me, I sit back and say, yeah, but what are you offering those men? Like, you're offering them this, a masculine experience of a battle, right? That's in us. And sure, there's negative ways to bring that fierceness out. But at the same time, men need to engage in some type of battle. And a lot of times that's done through, sports. I'm going to watch my team.
Activity.
And we even say, our defense is looking great this year. Like, oh, we got some great up and coming. Or did you see our draft picks? Like, what do I mean, our draft pick? You know, but we want to identify with our team because, you know, we're a battle there. And that resonates with the core desire of a man's heart. So,
yeah, like I just think that a lot of times that can feel threatening, mm-hmm. like you said, like the toxic masculinity or male aggression. Mm-hmm. But in your experience in working with men in these retreats, and as you stayed close to this work, what's the benefits of all that energy, all that warrior energy, all that, you know, even where it gets into what might be looked at as aggression or, mm-hmm. you know, at its worst, violence. But the roots of it are that deep draw for like fierceness, fighting, warrior. Like what are the benefits of that? What is that about? Where is that coming from? What have you seen?
Yeah. So really the foundational benefit is it helps a man come alive, like helps his heart come alive that, yeah, we realize we're in a stage of life where we may be supporting a family or, you know, life's just tough and you got to get the work done. But if they don't have like an escape to resonate with those core desires, they're going to just go dead inside, right? And then what sort of husband is showing up or father is showing up? And this is an interesting dynamic because you see it's really easy, whether in a church organization or schooling or community, to hyper-focus on the teenagers, the youth, right? I mean, you both have had teenagers and you see like their lives just...
We're developing them. We're investing in them.
Yeah. Right. And there's a lot of anxiety there or just, you know, high school is just... It can be torturous for some. And so you're like, I want to help this youth, right? And so we may put together youth programs and invest in, you know, church activities and whatnot.
Yeah.
But what good is all that, which is, I definitely support that. I think it's really important for that. But all that effort and work can never stand up to a divorced home when suddenly the father leaves or whatnot. I mean, that is such a traumatic experience on a teenager. And so we have to give attention to the men and as far as where their heart's at, because if they're dead inside, then we shouldn't be surprised if they're numbing out to pornography and all these other things.
Well, and what good is all the effort and energy in developing programs like that if a young man is just going to grow up to be dead inside anyway?
Right, exactly.
Whether he stays in his marriage or not.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like if the things available to him or that are supported are just going to be like kind of squashing his energy, his fire.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so that's why I think there just needs to be some more emphasis on just learning about these things. And I give a lot of, I always recommend and give a lot of credit to John Eldridge and his book, Wild at Heart. This is the Warrior Heart boot camps are based off of some of the principles he's written about and whatnot, just these core desires. And when you articulate this, you know, which we do at a retreat dynamic, you see men sort of be like, oh, I remember one individual said, you know, I've always been drawn to fly fishing and I feel guilty every time I go fly fishing. And now I realize that actually God has invited me to go fly fishing because that's where he finds me is on the river. You know, like amazing. That's my church, right? Like, and by going and taking time to go fly fishing allows him to show up to church a different way or to connect with other men a certain way, right? And when in reality, it's sometimes framed like, you know, you should just be with your family, enough with the, you know, little boy fishing trips, you know, like, but men need these things. They need retreat. They need connection with nature. A lot of them are hunting or whatnot. I mean, you hear some of these stories of, I'm not a big hunter myself, but others where they walk with the divine in the woods as they're hunting. You know, it's just, it's such a core experience and their heart needs that, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Yeah. And even if they're not out there with like 10 other guys in this big thing, like they are making a connection to themselves and often to God. Mm-hmm. And even to their families, like they're thinking about their role. Like a lot of these men are just out there like getting reinforced to go back and serve and connect and give and contribute. I mean, I feel that when I have those experiences, those moments. I spend a lot of time in the mornings out on the lake with a friend or two. And those experiences are so deeply centering for me. And there's the challenge, there's the fight of trying to improve and do better and I can go out there and fuss and perfect and do all this stuff, but like it wakes up a part of me that I don't get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's not something my wife can give me. That's not something my kids can give me. That is something that happens in the context of, I guess, that warrior context.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And the dynamic changes if I accompany you.
Yeah.
I mean, there is very much a place for a man to have his... a male experience with sometimes with other males, sometimes not, mm-hmm. but that is a separate rejuvenating experience that is unaffected by the feminine.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's that you know, husband and wife dynamic is an interesting one, because obviously, you know, yeah, you need to spend time with your wife. Date night, we, you know, definitely is a great thing. And, you know, being with your family, being present when you're home and whatnot. But often what happens is, you know, I saw a funny joke online. The biggest miracle that Christ did was that he had 12 friends as a grown man, right? And then it's like, well,
30.
Yeah, in his mid-30s. When in reality, he only had 11 friends, yeah, and we right. found out
yeah,
in the
exactly.
end. But, but it's, but like men, the average man doesn't have friends, right?
No.
And brotherhood is so crucial. And we often reiterate the phrase, like, you can't battle alone. And we think, well, no, I got my wife, right? Like, but if we keep coming to our wives and dumping our problems on her, our frustrations, and sometimes she's the problem, and then we sort of, well, just so you remember, you're the problem, right? Everyone, right? And so it's just not, you need a place to connect with God and also connect with other men, and so that that masculinity can be nourished in a healthy way, and you can be a stronger man for it.
Yeah, I love that. So when you're out there with these men like that, it's almost like you said that they're waking up to this, but it's familiar to them.
Oh yeah,
right. Or do you meet with some men? I mean, I've seen this in my practice, but it seems like there are a lot of men too who never grew up in the world of men, or never had a father or guy friends, or are always afraid of other men,
or support in pursuing the things that like call them to like connect with their deeper.
So for
self.
Some of them, this is like their first real like permission or experience.
Oh yeah.
Exposure
yeah,
to it.
Yeah, yeah. That word permission is crucial, is that at the end of the day, all we do at the retreat is give men permission to be the men who don't need permission, right? And they just wake up to it. It's interesting. I often ask the question during one of my presentations there of like, when was the first time God spoke with you or spoke to you? And they sit with it sort of thinking, and you know, and there's this one experience after I asked that, when we went through it. This one individual said, oh, I thought it was this experience when I was this young teenager. I was sort of in the Bible and reading, and I sort of had this spiritual moment. But then after you framed it differently, I realized at the end of Star Wars, I cried. Like, it was this moment through that story, through that epic journey that resonated with his heart. Mm. And for me, I realized when I was young, I was obsessed about Superman. And it was like, God couldn't reach me through the scriptures at that young age, but he could reach me through Superman. And for me to feel empowered, like I'm meant to be something great, right? That really resonated with my young masculine heart. And so, and leaning into that, that yeah, you're not literally Superman shooting lasers from your eyes, but there's a larger plan for you. And there's something that I put in your heart that needs to be developed.
Mm. And it may not even be something that's obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, you know, you're saying like a lot of us look at, when did God speak to you? You're thinking of it like in a religious or spiritual context,
right?
Church, scriptures, but it's that call from him in different places. Yeah. Through movies or.
Yeah.
As you're asking that, I'm asking myself the question now. Mm-hmm. So I'll come back to it. I'm trying to think. I have one that came to me as a dad, as an adult, when I was out camping with one of my sons, but I'm going to think back further, see if I can remember.
Well, I'm thinking of that experience you had as a very young child. And I don't know if this is related in the same way, since it wasn't my experience, but how you heard that beautiful opera music and you couldn't not weep.
I was two.
Oh, right? Wow. Yeah.
I was 2 years old.
And to this day, music is so profoundly a part of Jeff's life and a way that like he...
I still tear up if I hear beautiful music.
In the world, yeah.
And it doesn't matter what genre.
Mm.
Like even if it's... Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's like deep, if it's beautiful, if it's soulful, like...
And music is very much a part of the way you experience.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was 2 years old.
That's
my
incredible.
Dad put on some Pavarotti, some Italian. I don't know. He put on some Italian opera, and I'm just bawling, asking my dad, begging him to turn it off because it was so painful. And it wasn't. I just didn't know what to do with the surge.
Yeah, the emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's really helpful for men to sit back and think, how is God reaching me at a really young age? And they'll often find that like, oh, that's why I get really excited during the summer months. I want to go to the latest Superman or the superhero blockbuster, you know, because it speaks to my heart. Not that I need to be a superhero, but that there's something.
They're drawn to it. They're prioritizing it. They're, they like can't not think about it or do it.
Right.
Okay. So I am curious how these kinds of retreats and the focus there helps men not just develop themselves personally, but also turn toward their families, especially in the context of our podcast where couples are dealing with betrayal and often situations where men have become so self-focused that they miss so much of what's going on in their family communities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. So we often talk, and John Eldridge writes about the question that every man is born with, which is, do I have what it takes? And the minute they're born, they begin this quest to answer that question. The problem is we take it to all the wrong sources. As a young boy, we take it generally to our father. And we would just want, I remember that feeling of, I just wanted my dad to be proud of me. And if people push me on like, who's your Major League Baseball team? I always say the Atlanta Braves, even though I probably couldn't name a player on the team right now. But it's the Atlanta Braves because that was my father's team, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I remember going to him with a bunch of baseball cards when I was 8 or 9 and showing to him Atlanta Braves cards because I wanted the validation of like, Dad, I'm a Braves fan. Like, do I have what it takes now? Like, am I there, right? Or he'd come to my basketball games. I just wanted to not make the mistake on the court so that I gain his approval. Well, then we grow up and then girls come on the scene and then we start taking that question to them. Well, I'm gonna dress a certain way. I'm gonna act as somebody I'm not so that she'll like me. And then we get married and then it's like, I'm just gonna be the husband that's well-behaved and I'm gonna stop the fishing trips or stop going out with the boys because I'm going to be a really good husband. Well, what we're doing is we're taking our question to our wife of, do I have what it takes now? Am I lovable now? And this is just a flawed experiment from the beginning that we can't take our question to anybody else but God or a higher power of, do I have what it takes? Yeah, of course, you are loved. You know, you are mine, right? And so when men go through this process of realizing, oh, I've been posing my whole life, or, oh, I've been taking my question to my wife, trying for her to prove to me that I'm lovable, that I'm worth it, right? And then when they realize some of these, when they're, you know, disconnected out in the wilderness and they can connect with God and take the question to the right source, then they feel empowered as a man. Then they can return to their family offering them strength rather than asking for strength, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's such an empowering position for a man to be, oh, I can offer my family strength. They're not there to show that I am worthy or loved, but I can show that they're loved. And I can sit with them during the hard times. I can just let my wife cry. I don't have to fix what she's dealing with, but I can offer a shoulder for her to just cry on for a while, right? And so it's really remarkable the transformation that happens for the men to return to their home sort of more prepared to, again, offer that strength.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to say more about that?
Not yet. No, I'm
well,
just
and
listening.
Yeah, so it's interesting because, I'm glad you said that about, I remember in Wild at Heart, that sentiment that he says, you know, men, the temptation is for men to go to women for their strength, mm-hmm. but they're supposed to go to women to offer them their strength. And then, do you know Connor Beaton's work, Man Talks?
I don't. I have to show you that.
Connor's great. He's got a podcast called Man Talks. And one thing he says on there is he talks about vulnerability with men. And he says, you know, in modern society, a lot of men are told, you know, just be vulnerable with your wife, just be vulnerable. And so all these men are just coming and they're opening up their hearts and they're like dumping all their stuff. And their wife's just over there, like not respecting him, wanting to run for the hills, like just feeling like totally smothered and overwhelmed. And Connor says, no, you're doing it wrong. He says, she wants to see what's going on for you, but she wants to know that you've got it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
She wants to know that that you can handle it. And that like feels really safe and strengthening for her and for the family
mm-hmm.
instead of him just being this bleeding heart all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of men, it's like either shut down, say nothing, or just be vulnerable. And it's like, no. It's this other thing, which is connect with God, get your strength. Connor's, he's a more of a secular podcast, so he's not talking about God work, but the message is wherever you're going to get that strength from, other men, yourself, whatever, the universe, in our context here, we're talking about God. And then there's a lot of strength that you're offering, but it's interesting because from a relational standpoint, the support, the connection, the security, the safety he's getting back from his wife around that, the mm-hmm. respect, it's deeply regulating for him. It still has that effect. It's really healthy for him to feel like, okay, she sees me, loves me, respects me, but it's not answering the deeper question. It's just creating a secure bond.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a balance that I know I struggled with. To get right. I don't know that I understood that for a long, long time. And I'm still working to refine that.
Right.
But I just talk to so many men who feel caught in this world of like in the 21st century of how am I supposed to show up as a man?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
How am I supposed to do this? Because before I just go out and, you know, kill something and bring it home or just protect my home from the frontier, you know, the dangers on the frontier. And like, that was enough. Or I just go to work, clock in, clock out. Everybody's happy.
Right.
And it's just so different than that now. The stuff we're fighting is hard to measure and see. And anyway.
Yeah. And typically we don't know, most men don't know what to do with those feelings. And, you know, they've tried to, you know, I tried talking with my wife and I dumped it all on her and that just didn't, it blew up in my face, didn't go well. So then they don't know how to regulate that or reconcile those feelings. So then they numb out, they seclude, and they need to numb out because those feelings are uncomfortable. And you know what? Porn is great. It never asks anything of me. It's always there. I can, you know, it doesn't shame me. And unfortunately, that's the numbing agent that a lot of men use.
Temporarily answers their question in a counterfeit way.
Makes them feel like a man.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, that validation of like, wow, this person is like naked in front of me, you know, is some signal that like I'm enough.
Right.
And it's like totally fake.
Right.
But like biologically, emotionally, like it messes with people and it becomes very seductive and hard to put down. But even work and all the attaboys there or other things, outside things, or even just shutting down and trying to not feel or escaping into other things. There's so many avenues. Yeah, I see that guys can go. And I certainly for myself know that doing the work of deepening my own connection to God and myself and getting grounded like that and offering that to my wife and family, it's such a conscious, intentional thing that I have to be on top of. It's not something that just happens naturally. It didn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. I have to stay in front of it.
Right.
Is that the same for you?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's interesting, you know, interacting with some of the other men who have had struggles with like with pornography and whatnot.
Yeah.
That's not really been in my story, but nonetheless, it's that seeking for validation. And that has definitely been in my story.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
The attaboys they're like a drug for me. I just want the validation, and having a public platform and a podcast, sometimes that's easy to tap into.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I have to like regroup and say, you know, what are my true intentions of doing this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there some feeling that I feel like I'm not enough, like that I'm not wanted? And am I taking my question to my podcast audience? So I get all the emails back of accolades and whatnot. And so, yeah, the validation thing for a lot of men, like that's just, it comes in different forms, whether it's pornography or, you know, hitting your sales goals at work or church callings or titles or whatever it is.
But you're in a fragile position.
Yeah.
Totally fragile position. Jody, can I ask you a question? Like as a woman, and I get this might get pretty autobiographical with us, which I'm cool with, because you have a sample size of one husband.
Go on. Let's keep it that way. Okay.
Yeah. Right. But just as a woman, how are you relating to this? What's happening in terms of this idea of a man bringing strength instead of just dumping everything? Or what's that feel like for you as a woman and the other women you've talked to and you know, worked with or known?
So yeah, I think it's spot on. I think it's something that's very misunderstood. And I've been thinking about the reinforcement, the cultural reinforcement for men not being able to feel good about fishing or giving themselves to the activities that can do that, and whether it comes maybe primarily from women. I don't know if it's reinforced by men, and I'd like to discuss that a little bit. But I do think that there is a tendency for women, maybe because it's just the world that we understand, to think that men should be in the world in these ways because that makes sense to us. And so there is very likely pressure coming from women that you're dumping stuff on me, you're not bringing strength to me. So you just need to be more like me. That's just, I think, where I've gone with it in the past. But I mean, I don't think that's real, because when you show up in strength, I don't want you to be like me. I want to be able to kind of have the crazy or be the mess and have you just be a solid place that I can lean on. So I think that's absolutely onto something real.
And I think this is a lot of what triggers the codependent relationships that you see walk into your office, right?
Yeah.
Of the wife, you know, sees all this stuff sort of dumped on her and she doesn't necessarily want to reject it. She doesn't want to do this. So suddenly another teenager that I need a mother, right? And take care of. And, you know, it's okay. Or, you know, why don't you do this or that?
Because he's not handling it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you have to handle it. And then that's not a good place for any relationship.
That's not a partnership.
Right. Exactly.
Not attractive.
No.
Right. No.
Yeah. That sets couples up definitely for problems.
Yeah, we've dealt with that. I mean, that's just a, and I think a lot of men that I've talked to maybe never even get a chance to sit with it long enough. Either they numb it out or somebody else picks it up. But I mean, I just noticed, like, I went to a retreat with Everyman back in March, I think it was, a 3-day retreat out in Joshua Tree. And it was interesting, like, so much of what they did was just, when I was there with them, it was just creating space and stillness for men to sit with that tension, sit mm-hmm. with themselves. And we weren't just being talked at or lectured, or nobody was doing the work for us. And the work is really about noticing and feeling what's coming up and being honest about it and responding to it. And it's like, I just think if we could all just settle down a little bit and give men that space to do that. And that can be taking time out, doing these activities, or just, you know, in the context of a spouse, of a wife, not panicking or feeling like she's got to somehow, you know, right the ship or whatever, because he's stressed out or whatever, letting him sit with it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I find that when these men would do that, like what they would come up with or what the conclusions they come up with, there was a natural intelligence. There was a natural drive and power and protectiveness and honesty that would come up that really would come up with some fantastic outcomes and solutions.
Yeah. And just like with most things, you know, mindfulness is a great medicine, right? But for a lot of men, you know, I particularly struggle with sitting in a room alone for 20 minutes and just breathing, but I can go hit a bucket of balls and really think through a lot of stuff, you know, or go on a hike for an hour. And so, yeah, in this modern age we live, half the battle is just like having a venue to disconnect and escape for a minute just so you can breathe and think again. And these retreats sort of have, I mean, there's not like a magic message or a formula that we do that suddenly wakes men up. It's just sort of, listen, you're disconnected for 3 days. Like, just lean into that.
It's a container.
Yeah.
It holds them in that place.
Yes, absolutely.
Where they wouldn't do that for themselves.
Right.
You probably don't allow cell phones.
No. Yeah. We are generally trying. Where... Yeah. We take them to a place where even if they had one, they can't connect. So.
Polices itself.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So.
Yeah. There was another thing you were going to talk about.
Yeah. I am finding myself wondering about this, and I feel like it's a very fine line, but I'm just thinking about the role that women can play in not supporting their husbands in this. And like I say, it's a fine line because I remember those days when we were young and I had a house full of kids and I was overwhelmed and I needed and expected your help when you came home.
Yeah.
And so it couldn't work for us to, I mean, I wasn't getting time to myself. You weren't getting time to yourself. So a lot of things were out of order there. But I do know that I was not supportive of you disengaging to have this kind of thing. And maybe just because neither of us were getting it. So I felt like, yeah, no, you don't get to be the winner.
Well,
because we're both, there's just so much going on and neither of us really have our head above water.
Yeah.
But I am just thinking about how women can do things that will, so it's like a long-term play where you give. But even in my saying that, I'm like, yeah, but sometimes too much support just lends itself to entitlement and you're mm-hmm. still having, you know, like still having to just caretake the husband and the kids. So I feel like it's such a dicey dynamic in a marriage.
It is. And it really comes down to, you know, using a biblical example, the question that God asked Adam is, where are you? You know, and for couples just to take moments of that craziness to say, where are you at? Are you in a position of strength right now or not? Because I'm not and you're not. And so in that mode, again, we sort of trigger that codependency. Well, I'll help you get there if you help me, but I got the kids and, you know, it just sort of blows up in the messiness of it all. And so I think it's just, you know, just being aware of it, that these dynamics are happening, that you can't, you know, offer him strength as much as he can't offer you strength if you don't have it to give, right?
Right.
And so... yeah, there's some, maybe some recalibration that needs to happen.
I love that. That's awesome. And I did hear Brené Brown say one time that at the end of the day, she and her husband try to come together and just say that, just that, mm-hmm. where are you at? And mm-hmm. she might say, I have 80% to give. Mm-hmm. And he might be like, well, good, because I'm at a 25. And so then they just kind of, they work as a team. And then if she's a 10 and he's a 15, then mm-hmm. they just make adjustments. But they're working together so that they can each really be getting what they need and bring strength to the relationship.
Because I think that's the other side of like codependency that really helped me understand it. And boundaries, you know, boundaries are a tricky thing to really apply at times where if to communicate that I want to give something to this relationship, but I literally don't have anything to give to it right now. And sure, that's not your fault. And that's not necessarily my fault, but we need to figure out how we can regroup. And maybe I just need to go to bed a little bit early tonight. Can you handle the bedtime routine tonight? Or I need to just go on a walk and I'm going to go do that or whatever it is to, so that you can come back to the relationship with something to offer rather than just this overwhelming need of like, I guess I'm supposed to take care of this person, but I don't have it to give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a lot of it has to do with just entitlement. And I think the where it breaks down in a lot of relationships is there's a total lack of partnership. Mm-hmm. And you've got one person who, like you said, feels responsible to carry it. And oftentimes it's the women. Mm-hmm. They have to monitor the relational, dynamics and strengths. And they're just kind of trying to keep everything level. And so I think there's a lot of patterns. And obviously you can get into family of origin discussions and roles and what people saw growing up or what they think is normal. But I think at the core, it works best when you've got that kind of awareness of partnership of, I don't believe that like my need to have this time to like reset is more important than your need to reset in your way. I know for us, it's an ongoing discussion. Like Brené talks, it's just, there's never just like one routine or schedule around this. And of course, as our kids have gotten older and left the home, it frees up more resources. But in those younger years, when our kids were little and crazy and we were just really exhausted, I look back and think, yeah, it would have been great for us. I speak for myself, for me to be more intentional and ask that question and really look you in the eyes and just, I think we could have worked it out and generated more of that support for each other individually. But I think we were all just kind of like, we're all in all the time. And that's not sustainable.
Not sustainable. No.
Part when that was in the service of family, you know, but you lose, you know, there's levels, right? There's the family, there's the marriage. But before all of that, you were an individual.
Yeah. And for Jeff to say in the craziness, like, oh, tonight's my bros night, you know what, we're going to go hang out. And you're like, you know, because I need brotherhood. Like, are you kidding me? You know, like, you're going to leave us all here in this, right? And so being, just having that awareness of it all that, because I think most couples, I don't think they're aware of these dynamics enough to know that like, oh, actually for him going out with the boys, that's actually contributing to our marriage. So yeah, let's get that on the calendar. Let's arrange that. And I'll let you do that, you know, or I'm okay with that because it's important rather
if
than
that's what it's doing.
Yeah. If that's what it's doing. Exactly.
If it's just an escape and he gets just acting like an adolescent. And I've seen that plenty of times, then that's just going to build a resentment.
Right.
And I think it diminishes him.
Right. Yeah.
I think he's under functioning.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, so many of the guys I've worked with over the years, you know, they're coming into the process usually because there's been some sort of face plant. You know, they got caught with pornography or there's been an affair, some big betrayal of some kind. Generally, a sexual betrayal is the stuff I usually work with. But, and then there's a scrambling, there's a scurrying to get, you know, to stop the bleeding, get all that contained. And quite frankly, I think that that's the more concrete sort of process. I think I'm not going to say it's easy because it's not easy work. And I don't want to minimize that. But I think it's more measurable and I think it's easier. And I think people oftentimes, men especially, do themselves a tremendous disservice by seeing that as the end point. And in some ways, the work you're doing with Warrior Heart and the work we're talking about, this deeper development of a man's heart and helping him show up in strength and understanding who he is and feeling like really getting that deep answer of you're enough and you have what it takes and all that stuff isn't even possible until the bleeding has stopped. And so it's almost like, the exciting part is like, okay, now this other work is going to begin and this will be the rest of your life. And let's stage this and prepare you to really enter a process to do that, to not only generate strength for yourself, but for generations. Mm-hmm. And do you see that as well, that a lot of guys come into the Warrior Heart stuff after they've really battled all this other stuff? And this is when they're ready to step into this next realm.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of them, they you can see this emotional baggage that they're walking in there with. And they don't know what to do with it other than just to carry it around, right? And they don't realize how much it's impacting their relationships or how they're interacting with the world. And so, yeah, and it's sort of just this release valve of like, oh, like now I know the next step type of thing. And it's really cool process. And we have 80%, you know, return rate on these retreats that they experience it and they're like, when's the next one? Like wherever it is, I'm going to be there because I realize how much I need this, right? So.
Well, I imagine once they get a taste of that, of what that can really be in their life, that begins the baby steps of even being able to recognize in yourself, oh, I'm only at 40%. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a journey of its own, mm-hmm. just to be able to recognize it and then be able to verbalize it to another person. Right. So that sounds like, it sounds like they get a taste of what it's like, and then they begin incorporating little by little and building the skills that will allow them to hold that every day and show up in that way on a regular basis.
Yes, absolutely.
So I guess with that work, then I recognize that every man's journey is going to be a little different based on where he's starting, where he's coming from. Just as you've led these groups and spent time with these men, and you're involved in that deeper work there, what are some of the, like, I guess, milestones or touch points? What are some of the sequences that you see men kind of going through as they wake up to this and start to engage in this? What should they be looking for? What are some of the processes? I mean, you could just say, well, just come to the Warrior Heart group, right, or find a group and go do that. But what's happening? What do you see happening with that?
Yeah, definitely don't want to create the perception that the only way to fix this is to come to our retreat. You know, we've cracked the code. Again, it's just
link in the bio.
That's right. It's just a container that we offer. But to me, it comes back to that, is like finding the container, whether it's a good book to read. You know, I have to recommend Wild at Heart. You know, you mentioned that podcast earlier. There's just so many, like, just to start and start becoming aware of these things. So that awareness is, I think, the step one. And then helping them reframe their life into what we call the larger story. So, you know, I've had individuals come and leave with this intent of, I've known I needed to make a job change for 6 years now, and now I'm going to finally do it, right? Or I get that I need permission to do that hunting trip every year, so I'm going to do that, right? So you sort of see these outward actions that they're recognizing, categorizing what actions or what framing re-energizes their heart so that then they can return that strength to their family and to themselves and whatnot. And then, you know, just that vulnerability, I think, is another stage, mm-hmm. that men are returning to their church group and they're, you know, raising their hand and being like, you know, this week was a tough week, and let me tell you why. And other men are drawn to that because, like, I'm not the only one, right? So I don't know if there's, like, any more formal stages than that, that just that feeling of, man, I feel like I'm alive. Like, I feel energy in my life rather than just being pulled down by all these responsibilities and the work and, you know,
yeah,
relationships and those things. So yeah, that's what comes to mind.
Yeah, I love that. Again, I'm thinking of a conversation I heard, again, Connor Beaton have with another man, and he basically just said, like, men need to feel like they're potent. Men need to feel like that strength, that energy inside of them. And it doesn't mean that they're just going to go out and be aggressive, like, which is what we mostly think of potency, or like that energy, that intensity, mm-hmm. but also just sort of the de-selfing, like the nice guy that just is like there for everybody, says yes to everything, has no boundaries, just like whatever, like a total blob of a person, right? Yeah. I've been there. But that sort of waking up and feeling that fire, that potency, that power, that energy, and that aliveness, like a man who's in touch with that and feels that, he's going to get stuff done. He's going to, like, move things forward. He's going to be there for his loved ones and family. He's going to be protective. He's not going to, like, settle for counterfeits. Mm-hmm. He's just going to be a stronger man and mm-hmm. a real asset to our communities and society.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that word. And I thought of that because the other night I had a conversation with one of my sons. And I won't go into a ton of details, but he's sort of waking up. He's in his early 20s, and he's waking up to his own potency. He's starting to recognize, hey, wait a minute, like, I don't have to just play along with these games that are going on, like, in certain contexts. I don't have mm-hmm. to just, you know, say yes to everything. I don't have to just be okay with that. I can think for myself. I can really, like, and really, that was such a fun conversation, because it was like, he was asking me, basically, do I have what it takes?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you're doing it. This is the work. This is great. Like, you're rising up as a man. And so if you've never had, like, a dad do that for you or another man give you that permission, it's never too late.
That's,
I mean,
true.
I'm grateful my sons were having these conversations, and I'm grateful for the support and work that I've been exposed to and I'm doing. But if you're listening to this and you're in your 50s or 60s and you've never had anybody, you've never felt that fire, you're so disconnected from it, it's not too late.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that word potency. That
yeah.
At the end of the day, like, I want to be the man that if a grizzly bear stands out in front of my family, that I have strength enough to be the one that stands in between my family
yeah.
and the grizzly bear, or, you know, insert modern day issue.
Whatever. You
know,
you call it. Yeah.
That I'm not going to be just the passive
yeah.
individual that you know, is mainly just telling my wife, hey, settle down, let's not rock the boat, right? But actually steps forward and says, no, this isn't okay. And this needs to change. And you're not doing it in a overly aggressive way or looking to punch someone in the face or something, but that you can be that, play that role in your relationship then and offer that masculinity when it's needed.
You know? And that aliveness, I think, is just so good for us as men, just to feel that all the time. And I think there's a lot of us, and I've been there, that are just walking around living beneath their privilege, feeling dead inside, feeling like society has just kind of sucked it out of them. And that it's maybe even threatening to women and children in the world to feel that fire. And it's not.
Yeah.
When it's unregulated, sure, it's going to do a ton of damage. But I mean, I'd like something to regulate. Let's wake it up.
Yeah, exactly.
And work with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Powerful stuff.
Do you feel that as a woman? Can you tell the difference when there's fire in me? I'll just speak for myself. Or our sons, or in a man?
Oh, yeah.
How would you describe it? Like, what does it feel like on the outside from the feminine, from a woman?
Like, it feels alive. It's attractive.
Yeah.
It's like, it comes with an energy, as opposed to just going through the motions or playing along or just, I mean, I love how you talk about it, like being dead inside. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, there is a very, like, not concrete, but like a tangible feeling of dead versus alive.
I think some women like
unintentionally or maybe unconsciously like pick fights or like approach whatever to try and wake up that energy in a man to like get him to engage.
Sure.
I mean, that's probably really...
Oh, well, I mean, I can speak for myself. Yeah. There have been times that I feel like...
Wake up, dead man?
Yes, yes. And that I'm raising my voice and I'm bringing more because I want... Yes. And then if you haven't like... fought back in my mind. I'm like, I don't want to fight, but I want to meet something. Yes.
That's, and how you said it's attractive. I love that. You know, you think you notice this in high school or, you know, the popular attractive girl always picks the bad boy, you know, to date. And you're like, what's going on there? Like, I'm such a nice guy. Like, what's the problem? Like, why wouldn't she pick me? When in reality, it's like, yes, that individual may be more toxic masculine, but that's the only masculine she recognizes at the moment. She's never seen healthy masculine. So when you offer that, it's like, oh.
It feels dangerous and energetic.
How are you? Like, let's talk for a minute, right? There's an attraction there for women when...
Confidence, strength.
Yeah, when you offer that.
Yeah.
The guy, you know, is probably going to be a terrible husband. Just a bully.
I know, right? Or abusive. Yeah.
Whatever. But the energy is, there is something there that matters. And nice guys who are good men with integrity can generate that and should generate that.
Yeah.
I think Jordan Peterson, love him or hate him, right? One thing he said that I absolutely love, and he's same thing. He says, like, you need to be a monster.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Have you heard that?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You need to know that you're a monster inside. Yeah. But you're not going to walk around act like a monster.
Yeah, but you're tamed, right? Like,
tamed.
You're in control of the monster.
Yeah.
Right?
But you know that that's inside of you. And I think that's what my son was wanting to know. Like, I want to feel that. He was like saying to me, like, Dad, I've never even been in a fist fight.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, you don't need to go get one. That'll get you thrown in jail. But like, but you need to know that if you had to protect your girlfriend or another person, that you would have what it takes.
Yeah. One of the retreats, we had a guy that came, he'd been a few of them, and he runs a kickboxing gym, I think in Arizona.
Yeah.
And he brought some of his gloves and he's like, hey, during one of the free times, if you're interested, I'll walk you through and just teach you how to throw a punch. And it was like this emotional experience for some men that they were never even taught how to throw a punch. Not because we need to go out there and get in fights, but I just want to be a man that knows how to throw a punch, you know, when it's needed.
Right.
And it's amazing.
It's that I need to,
things.
I want to know I have what it takes if I'm called on. And that's a really shaming, emasculating thing to come up short for men. We want to know we can deliver.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful.
Yep.
Yeah. I got goosebumps, man.
Oof.
I'm going to go out and like, I don't know.
We're going to go lift stuff out of the parking lot here when we're done. Found the chest.
It's awesome. Go do it. Yes, I support it.
Awesome. Well, we need to wrap this up here, but why don't you tell people where they can, we'd love to direct people to Warrior Heart.
The website is awarriorheart.com and we have retreats. We're having more and more retreats all over the country at this point, and they're worth, you know, buying a plane ticket to. I think that would be well worth it as well. But I don't want people to think that the retreat's the only way. There's great books like Wild at Heart. And I mean, there's so many out there related to healthy masculinity. And
yeah, there's a few groups popping up that really are doing some good work.
Yeah, and the podcasts you mentioned, you know, I know John Eldridge has his own podcast called Wild at Heart. I listen to that a lot. And just start exploring what this healthy masculinity could look like and where you're maybe coming up short there. So
yeah. And for the women listening, like if you, you know, I think it's important to give your honest feedback about what it feels like and what you desire and what you want from this as well, don't you think?
Sure.
I mean, I think the feedback from a wife or a girlfriend or, you know, or a mom to her son, like it can be really a powerful, I mean, we, you know, we want to be there for the people we love. And so having that feedback and that permission and that encouragement is helpful as well. But even if they don't give it to you, I think it's important to still recognize no one can give that to you or take it from you. Like you've got to be in charge of it.
Right. Yep.
So I just mostly wanted to, you know, let the women listening know that you don't have to be passive about this. You can speak up and say, this matters to me, or like, I'd love to see you do this, or that would really be powerful to have that in our family or whatever. Yeah. Any final thoughts? Any thoughts? I think we've covered a lot of ground here. It's been awesome.
Yeah. I just, you know, I'm just so grateful that, not that I was like dead inside, but I didn't know like even how to navigate the journey of being a man, especially an adult man. And to realize statistically, the demographic most likely to die by suicide is men, adult men,
yeah,
you know, 40, 50 years old. And to realize that they're sort of dying on the vine there and they need permission to not need permission to be a man, you know? And so giving them that, and if you're that man listening, like take it, like you have permission to be alive inside.
That's right.
And manifest what God put in you.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I relate to that, exactly what you're saying. And that's been a huge part of my life as well, is growing into that and then passing it on to my sons as well. And yeah. Thanks, Kurt.
Yeah. It's fun to be here.
Fantastic. It's so
great.
Let's
do it again.
Let's do it again. Yeah. Love talking to you about this stuff. And those of you listening will check out these resources. Anyway, anything else, Jode?
No, I'm good.
Great. Awesome. All right, everyone. Thanks a lot. We want to thank Kurt for joining us on the podcast today. It's always great to connect with him, and it was so fun to have him in the studio with us. You can learn more about the Warrior Heart 3-day experience boot camp. It's such an awesome experience, and you can learn about it on their website, awarriorheart.com. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. And we want to, again, thank you for joining us today on the podcast. It's always great to connect with all of you. And we also want to let you know about the free course that you can download in the show notes to help you heal from broken trust. And also, if you're the one that broke the trust, find resources and support in these early days and weeks. It's so important. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We will catch you in the next episode.